It's rich, it's alive, it's vivid. Stereophonic sound.
Are you fed up with constantly searching for the records you want?
These kids' real teachers are these satanic musical things.
Every one of my records means something. The label, the producer, the year it was made.
I'm teaching you about rock music.
Seriously, you're totally elitist. You feel like the unappreciated scholars.
Okay, let's spin a disc.
Hello, welcome back to Cut by Cut Podcast. I'm Chris, and I'm here with...
Brooke.
And Eric.
Hello, everybody.
Hey, gang.
Hey.
Before we get started, I had something I wanted to say.
Sure.
I want to thank the listeners out there. We're not famous. We haven't really done anything culturally significant yet. And they're choosing to listen to us. So, you know, thank you.
That's very kind of you. That was very nice of you. We saw a huge explosion this past session in between recording because, Chris, you went out of your way to promote the show by using a still from, I think, apparently a movie that is very near and dear to everybody on the planet.
Yeah, well, I put that Dirty Dancing frame up.
A film I've never seen.
Good for you.
I know that there's some dirty dancing. I know that one does not put baby in a corner.
You don't do that.
And there's something with a golf course.
I don't even remember that.
I don't know about that, but there's a lot of lifting in the air.
Yes. Isn't that the move, right? That's the dirty part of the dancing?
Maybe.
Or the dancing part of the dirty?
Right.
That's the, what do you call the, that's like the ultimate move that they, that's like, you know, it's the peak of the dance. I don't know the dancing term for that.
I think the peak ultimate.
The run, the full on run into the.
Does she run, or does he just pick her up and thrust her in the air?
No, there's a run.
Really?
Yes.
Erin Gray, she was the sister in Ferris Bueller, right?
No idea.
I have no idea.
Not Erin Gray. What was her
name? We're in the wrong episode, though.
That's true. Should we start this whole thing over?
No, that's fine. A little prelude into the next episode, which will be Make Out Summer.
No, it's not, because this is episode 19. We're recording backwards.
Oh.
To accommodate our co-host today.
So they would have already, we would have already talked about this.
Precisely. So we've done time traveling the other way.
Okay, interesting.
So we have that working out for us. curse you. Curse you. This is why time travel is so damn confusing. This is why you don't send Terminators back to change anything. Because then you won't have a Terminator. If you changed it, you won't have a Terminator to go. Anyway. Huge, huge thing. We are, in fact, using said broken time travel technology.
In fact, that's your next episode.
Time travel. The episode we're doing right now is taking us all the way back to 1988.
Yes, welcome to 1988, which, oh, God.
Well, all three of us have chosen songs from that particular year. We did the topic engine. We've got a whole new system here for choosing.
Oh, cool.
And the selected topic was 1988. Yes, all three of us chose songs
from
that particular year.
Yes, we did.
Those 365 days.
Yes, sir.
I'm not sure if it was a leap year.
It was.
Was it?
Yes, it was.
366 days. Something in me knew that.
Yeah.
You want to start with your track? Tell us what it was.
Well,
sure. And then I'll play a little bit of it.
Sure. You could probably start it while I talk here. So I picked a song called, it's by Pantera, but it's from a forgotten album. They kind of deny it ever happened. But this was, it was before Cowboys from Hell, the one before Cowboys from Hell. Phil Anselmo has joined the band. And
the song is called, the album is called what?
The album is called Power Metal. And the song is called Over and Out. Yeah, just enjoy the chops of Diamond Darryl.
We'll be right back.
Well, yeah. So Pantera.
I'm going to let it play under the conversation for the remainder of the 8 minutes that it goes on.
I just love the music. Time is wanting to forget this album, probably for a reason. It's very derivative, you know, in terms of like, you know, it's very Judas Priest-y. It's metal of the time. It's before Pantera had actually kind of reached the peak of you know, sonically. They eventually come into this kind of groovish metal style, and this was a little before that. But
you can tell that they're trying to stand on the shoulders of the giants before them.
Oh yeah,
there's a lot of the wah, and there's some Maiden going on in there.
I picked like the one song where he isn't actually going all, you know, Halford Judas Priest-y on like all the vocals. So the next album, Cowboys from Hell, he does less of that, and then the next album, I don't think you ever, there might only be a couple songs, a handful of songs going forward that he even does that anymore. He has chops, and quite frankly, he probably, Anselmo there probably, had they chosen to stick with that style, he probably could have become one of the best at it. He had the chops.
Well, I know two things about Pantera from this day and age. The first one is that the track Proud to Be Loud off Power Metal is in the Mighty Ducks 2 soundtrack.
Way to get the sequel.
The second was that I don't think I'm manly enough for Pantera.
Right.
I never felt like I had enough testosterone in me to listen to a Pantera album, especially the later stuff.
So I played at the time when I got into them around that Vulgar Display of Power album. That was the first I have a little story there. I was, however old I was, I got on the school bus. I'm walking towards the back of the bus, and I hear these sounds coming out of someone in front of me's or behind me, actually, his headphones. You know, he's got these big, even at the time, this was mid-90s.
Yeah, there were no earbuds at that time.
No, it was this guy, the small, he cheap, actually circular had, he ones had big or headsets on like we had now, and he was clearly playing them too loud. I could hear the music almost perfectly sitting in front of him. So I turned around. There was a guy I'd never talked to much, a quiet kid. Anyway, I said, "What's that?" And he dropped the headphones on my
head. And went, "Pantera, Power Metal."
Yeah, he was like, no, it wasn't. he dropped it on my head and he said, "Check it out." And it's one of those, I hate to sound too melodramatic or whatever the word is there, but my music tastes were never the same, you know.
So this is the what do you call the soup, that primordial soup of your musical tastes?
I've been, my dad was pretty wide range in his music choice. He had, you know, everything from Whitesnake and Dio to Quiet Riot to the Beatles to Yaz to Yanni to, you know, ZZ Top. I mean, he liked all this stuff.
Yeah.
David Sanborn on the saxophone, jazzy stuff. So my dad had a pretty epic record collection. So I had, I had plenty of exposure to various music types, but this was by far that song Walk. That kind of the classic tune off.
Right.
Walk.
Yeah.
So,
that was the third and final extent of my Pantera knowledge.
That was at that time the heavy, you know, I heard AC/DC, but that was the heaviest thing I had probably ever heard.
Right.
Right. So, the next day I brought in a blank tape. I brought in a blank cassette tape and I said, "Can you make a copy of this for me?"
I want to really bring it back to this song, because
you're right.
When we chose the topic, when the topic engine dictated 88,
1988,
I looked at the list, right?
Yeah.
And it was like Pixies, Surfer Rosa.
Sure.
The Descendants were becoming All.
Yep.
Bad Religion, Suffer.
Which we'll get to,
There were easily 100 extremely recognizable albums from 88. I mean, 88 was a banner year for music.
Sure.
And you chose Power Metal by Pantera.
Well, I'll tell you how
the
I got
bastard
it.
Son of.
Let
of,
me back up a little bit. So the
it's
the
because you like the big the, hair.
So 88 to me was nostalgia. Look, I was 8 years old at the time. You know, when we're talking about in 1988, so I jumped ahead there to high school where someone introduced me to Pantera. So no, I was not listening to this album. But what what 1988 brought to my mind was I had a couple different people that babysitters.
Yeah.
You know, 8 years old, my dad would go out and someone would come over and watch us. And we had a couple. There was Alyssa from...
You don't have to mansplain babysitting to me. I'm totally yeah. got it. I don't have kids, yeah, but right, I figured right. it out.
Sorry. So we had Alyssa from across the street, who was probably my first crush. But then we had a girl from down the street. I forgot her name, but she had a brother, maybe a twin brother. I don't... They looked the same.
Yeah.
I don't remember the... But anyway... One time only. His name was, I had to write it down because I had to search my memory. I've forgotten it now that I'm on the spot. Anyway, it doesn't matter.
We'll call him Randall Pennyweather for the sole purpose of this show.
Randall. Well, Randall, his name was Donnie. Sorry.
Much better.
Donnie I believe the last name
that's
was,
an 80s name, Donnie.
Donnie Wilde, I believe his name was. With an E.
Ooh.
So
did he name himself that?
I don't know. It may be. I mean, he's listening to power metal here.
Right, yeah.
So I have a distinct memory of him watching us, and he was clearly bored with the idea of having to watch us, but he probably needed the cash, right? So, and his sister couldn't do it. But he brought with him this case of cassette tapes. And I can still remember, you know, he had AC/DC in there, but he had Wasp.
Yeah.
He had Pantera in there. He had Nuclear Assault, MOD. And I can remember, there's still a mental image that I have of the cassettes he had, and there was probably 6 or 8 of them. And as I started getting into metal, I went back and tried to find those bands.
Sure.
So, Nuclear Assault, I still had a picture of the album on there. It has... The album was called Survive, that I found out now, and it had kind of 2 nuclear power plant stacks on the cover and all. Anyway, so I wanted to find that album, which was also difficult to find. It's out of print, and the people who own the rights to it have...
Yeah, moral of the story is all the music you love from 88 has been pulled from the history books.
So, yeah, they kind of... Like, Pantera denies this album even happened now.
How can you possibly...
Why?
Only because it doesn't their style. I mean, if you look at the cover image there, which I'm sure we'll put on the podcast.
Well, I want a woman's perspective on this cover because for me, I'm not, you know, manly enough to listen to Pantera in my mind.
Yeah. So for the people who don't know what the album cover looks like, basically everyone has leather on and or denim. Denim and leather vests, or leather pants, huge hair.
Tell me, how would you describe any one of these hairstyles? Particularly, is that Diamond Darrell on the far our right?
I believe so, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, easily shorter than everybody else. I'd like to think he's just
stockier,
standing further away.
He looks possibly a little stockier. The placement, he's standing in the back.
Yeah.
What's up with that?
He's the spine. He is the backbone of Pantera. I think he's the one
he's got the hairiest chest. I'm just going to point that out.
And he's the least excited, I think, to be in this particular style of outfit.
You know what? To be honest, it's like these 3 guys are in the band, and then he's just on the corner.
Right.
Like,
somebody's kid
out,
brother.
You know, like, yeah. Aww.
I know.
Kind of bad for
him. I always forget one of the guys I don't think was in the band going forward. I could be wrong.
So the guy on the far left, I don't know who that is, but what is a healthy hair-to-head ratio?
Well, this is that they were trying to find that sound. The album before this.
Oh, I think they found the sound. I'm talking about this man's face. It's vanished in. Look at how much hair he has versus how little face
well,
he has.
The
80s, man. Think
the
about
hairstyle.
Think
was,
about who else was around. They got Poison. You got Motley Crue. These are the people taking the charts. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So hair bands were a thing.
I don't think.
Where was the perm in all this? Because I feel like a lot of these big hairstyles, was the perm before?
I think they were coming out of the perm.
I think that's what's happening here because I'm just looking at the amount of hair and the fluffiness.
Yeah.
That's suggesting maybe there's a perm in there.
So. Or that it's like coming out now,
yeah.
But they want to keep the length.
Right.
You know, they're going in. 88 was also, wasn't that the start of like Guns N' Roses?
GNR Lies, yep.
Yeah. So out of all of these songs, you chose power metal because you couldn't find nuclear power plant.
I'm trying to go with, again, I was going for the nostalgia of the music that my babysitter was listening to.
Sure.
That's it.
That's great.
1988. You wanted to know what I was doing? I had a teenager, for a guy twice my age,
yep.
You know, who was into metal.
Wow, that's so weird if you think about it that way. You're bizarre. 8 and he's twice your age. All right. Yeah, I always thought of
So that's it. I mean, I did my deep cut kind of thing. I had at least a...
I looked at the lyrics of this song, and, you know, I'm not really sure I got much out of them. I looked at...
Yeah, they're metal for metal's sake.
Yeah.
There's nothing...
You know, they say, read between the lines, and then they scream, no way out. When the cat goes away, over and out, mice come out and play. But I couldn't figure out, is no way out or when the cat goes away supposed to be the in between the lines part? Like, is he shouting and then we get in between the lines? Or is the shout the in between the lines and then the line?
Wait.
You with me on this one?
Read it one more time.
No way out, screamed. When the cat's away, over and out, the mice come out and play. No way out, every dog has its day. Which, by the way, is a quote from Hamlet. So there's a lot like, do you see what I'm talking about now that you're looking at the lyrics?
Yeah, I had already looked at them.
There's, yeah.
They're, I think they went more for the cadence and the, you know, the hitting on the right syllable and rhyme.
I will say, before we transition, I'm going to say I came into this prepared not to like this.
Yeah.
When you sent me and I saw the word Pantera on the text machine, I thought... I'm done. I quit this podcast. I'm going to change my name to Randall Pennyweather and move away. What was the name we came up with earlier? Larry Goodporn or something?
Oh, no. Less porn.
Less porn.
Less porn.
I thought, you know, wow, this is what I want. Then I started reading about the album and how it was their move from glam to thrash.
Yeah,
You can totally see that on the album cover.
Yeah.
Well, again, I'm coming at this from the... I know their later sound very well in that, you know, again, I got introduced to it in the way I did on the bus there. And I play a lot of sports at the time. So it was a total... Getting into Pantera at that time was like... I was the one sitting on the bench with the headphones on, getting my game face on, if you will. Mm-hmm. You know, not talking to anyone else. I'm just trying to get in the zone. And I had Pantera on the headset.
This is totally... workout room, so, getting ready to crack heads on the soccer field.
So totally,
I don't know how you play soccer.
Well, I did at the time, and I also played baseball, and you know, it was my way of. I was never the prototypical jock, but I had some I had some fun and I had some ability, and it was a good time. But this is what was coursing through my veins at the time, auditorily.
And that's a perfect transition now, because the next track that we're going to hear is Bad Religion's You Are, parentheses, The Government.
I wanted to call out the parentheses that you love so much.
And I chose the song, and honest to God, Chris.
I have in my notes here, Eric! Exclamation point, parentheses.
Yeah, I earn whatever you're prepared to give me about parentheses on this one. So this is You Are, The Government from Bad Religion's 1988 album, Suffer.
Jurisdiction, and I make a difference. whopping 1 minute song.
Yep. Oh, God bless them. So I've got two things I want
to
say
that
about this.
That song was shorter than the intro to my song.
Right? That was like the Rhode Island of songs. Like yours was Texas and mine was just a small little town in it.
So Eric, let me ask you, in a year where Roy Orbison has died, Anthrax has released State of Euphoria, Slayer has released South of Heaven, Gorilla Biscuits and Youth of Today are marching along their paths, why did you choose Bad Religion?
I think that this is the penultimate punk song for the late 80s. First of all, I never knew that song had a B-side to it. This album had a B-side to it. When I was in 10th grade, there was a girl named Allie who was sort of the punk prima donna everyone had a crush on. And she was dating this cat named Dave Watts who had come from California.
Everyone was striving to be punk enough.
And everybody was, well, yeah, but everybody was really striving to impress Dave.
Okay.
But it was like, Dave was the top of Everest.
So,
yeah, so, but everyone ended up at base camp.
So not to, you know?
Wait,
not
what's
to
going on? Sorry.
Not to totally.
Can you just be careful? I think one of us is hitting something.
Let me take.
I'm going to take blame for it.
There you go. I moved my notebook off the wires.
Okay, cool.
Not to derail your thing, but do you ever watch The State? Remember The State?
Oh, yeah.
Comedy? They had that high school thing where everyone loves someone else. They'd step aside, but I love Bobo.
That was pretty much it, right? But no, everybody wanted Dave, I think, but you kind of had to just settle at base camp for Allie. But regardless, you arrived at Everest, you know?
Sure.
You were at the penultimate mountain here.
Yeah.
And I love reducing people to geodesic issues. But anyway, moral of the story is Dave was from California. And so he had brought all this, you know, SoCal LA punk with him to what was, in our scene, very heavily oi dominated, very heavily crass and conflict and crust, a lot of the early crust stuff. That was our scene. This album went around our group like crazy, but it was only on a 60-minute tape.
Yeah.
So he had, and it was the same on A side and B side. And we thought that this album was just so fast and so furious that it was only like 12 minutes long, man.
All right.
And, you know, we'd tape it for each other and it would wear down and it was blaring out of boomboxes in our bedrooms and all these places. And we were on Thayer Street when CDs were first becoming a big deal. And this guy,
you're literally on the street.
Yeah.
Like, hey, these are a big deal.
Yeah. There was a huge banner across Thayer Street. CDs, big deal. And we were at Play It Again or Tom's Tracks or something.
Yep.
And my friend James Demas held up, you know, the disc. And I was like, oh my God, there's only one copy. So I said, Jamie, you know, I don't have a CD player right this second. You obviously buy it. And we'll listen to it without fear of it getting eaten. Because that was the cool thing about CDs was they were tough.
Right.
So we're listening and like, oh my God, we're looking through the lyric book. And we're like, there seems to be a lot more here. And all of a sudden it just went into side two. And our world just became that much bigger.
Nice.
So as far as nostalgia goes, Suffer brings me back. But it was also, you know, we all knew that Milo had left the Descendants in 87 to go pursue a college degree. And we kind of figured kids were just kind of like, well, Milo's just doing that. And all of a sudden Greg Gaffin comes out and he's going for his PhD in zoology. And it was like, wait a second, you can actually be intellectual. Like punk doesn't have to be snotty, drunk, you know, fart songs, I'm a bear, I sleep in the woods kind of stuff.
Sure, yeah.
You can actually say things like, you know, Puritan work ethic maintain its subconscious edge, and Old Glory maintains your consciousness.
Yeah, which I read it even now, and I'm like, what?
Yeah. Well, I remember taking an SAT prep course the following year, and
had words
and like the Bad Religion back catalog. I'm convinced.
Well, here, I'm glad you brought that up. I had to look up a word.
Did you? What'd you look up?
Jurisprudence.
Really?
Yeah.
I knew the other ones. You know, I did not know what that was.
I didn't either.
I looked up volition, which is the one right before it.
Yeah. Well, so yeah, I knew that word, but in that it's your the ability to exercise your free will, right?
Correct.
Yep. So jurisprudence, though, I was like, these are words I feel like I should know, but together they mean nothing to me. So,
and it's the fact that he's dropping these in a minute song.
Yeah.
And that, you know, we did. We would, you know, sit at lunchroom and be like, man, so this word, right?
So just to pay it off, it's it's a legal system, which anyway, for the listener, jurisprudence. There's your word of the day.
But finally, punk wasn't nihilistic. You know, this was real politically active punk.
Right.
And
in your face.
So yeah. To quote Fat Mike from NOFX, the album that changed everything. That's Fat Mike there for you to tie it into some of the other stuff we've talked about.
This was, in my mind, this totally was. And just the idea that it was called Bad Religion, and the cover has, you saw the cover, it's a kid standing in a suburban street on fire.
I love that.
That was 100% how I felt as a kid hearing this. And I'm trying to lead you down a path here, because to me, that's that image and the cover of Suffer. And I've always been trying to rationalize what that fire is. And it's an outward, in my mind, an outward manifestation of that fire inside. That suburbia, having grown up in suburbia and living in it as an adult, it's all about this feigned smile and this everything's okay. And for me, but Bad Religion to me was that fire, was that time where I realized I don't have to be polite. You know, that I don't have to play by the same set of rules, but that just has to be me on fire. You know, I've never got the sense that kid was going to go burn all suburbia down. I thought like he was woke in that picture, in that image. Mm. And that to me is, you know, I could have chosen any song off this album and discussed it, but I loved the idea of there's a loser in my house and a puppet on my stool. And those are the two big things I think that as a kid that make you, and I'll use the stupid word, but make you woke, right? The idea that my parents can be wrong, and in many cases, my parents are wrong. And now how do we handle where I am in 1988 versus where my parents are in 1988? Mm. And then how do we handle that when I go out into the world, and having grown up in the church as I did, and having grown up with a father who was a pastor and stuff like that, that it's okay to question, and it's okay to the cognitive dissonance of listening to Bad Religion, right? A group founded by what they call themselves naturalists, but really they're atheists. Was very hard, you know. But it made me dig my heels into things. I had to know what I believed so I could enjoy the music and enjoy other things.
I didn't have, in some of my angst, when I did find Bad Religion, it was asking you to be smarter about your anger.
Yeah.
You know, your angst. And I didn't always have that. I didn't know what it was. You know what I mean? Or it was, or at least maybe had I found it at a different time, but I didn't always feel smart about the way I felt. So I stayed away from Bad Religion a little bit.
Interesting.
Because it was almost holding you accountable. You're having these feelings and you don't agree with things, but he's got a $5 vocabulary, you know what I mean? And sure, I mean, I did fine academically, but it was like, I was more of a Pantera guy where I was boiling over and it just,
you know, right.
I had to do everything I could do to keep it from boiling over, like physically, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It was a rage kind of thing. So it was, so at the time.
Well, I go back to what was it John Lydon once said, which is I'm not strong, right? I'm not a physically imposing dude.
Right.
So words have always had to be my weapons.
Yeah.
I've never had the luxury of being like, well, I feel good about winning this fight or this athletic, you know, this athletic move into my prowess. I get my ass kicked. And I did for a very, you know, I remember being a little kid and running home with my big ass cello, you know, home from school. It's like the bullies chased me.
And I'll say this too, but even as someone who's, you know, had my ass kicked and given an ass kicking, but I can humbly say that it's almost more, the flame is almost quenched more when you got your ass kicked.
You know, it's funny you should say that, because as you're saying this, I'm thinking to myself, you're exactly right. Like, there's no good story in I kicked his ass.
Yeah, yeah.
You just sound like a jerk.
Yeah. Yeah.
With I got my ass kicked, there's a little bit of listener sympathy there.
Yeah. Yeah, and it was never from my, I was lucky enough to never have been like bullied in a sense, so my angst wasn't from that angle.
Yeah.
Because I could defend myself, and I wasn't afraid to. But still.
Well, I you know, the incident with the cello.
Yeah.
This kid chased me home, and I wish I could remember the kid's name, but I went home and I just flat out was like, yeah, this kid just totally beat me up. And my dad was like, we're going to go to the family's house. Yeah. And there was no hesitancy. I was like, yeah, all right, let's do it. I mean, I was like,
your cello okay?
You know, cello was fine. The kid had no interest in the cello. It was just the 4-foot twerp running home with it. That was the target. But I had no problems going, yeah, okay, that's the kid who did it.
Yeah.
You know, what about the ramifications? What ramifications?
Right. Like, I'm going to get my butt kicked again?
Yeah. Like, oh no. What world do I live in? At least I can, you know, rat this kid out and get some sort of justice for myself. And,
yeah, sure.
And when that door shut, as his dad was turning around to talk to him, I won.
Yeah.
You know,
well, yeah.
I won in the long game. So let's now look at our third track.
Third song.
For 1988.
So when I was looking up songs, there was a lot of like your typical 80s stuff. I just basically went to like Billboard's 1988 just to see what would be there.
Yeah.
I searched for a long time, and then I came up with Joan Jett's song, I Hate Myself for Loving You. So I just love that song. I think for every girl, that was a huge step. I mean, going even back to her first group, The Runaways, all girls.
And right, Lita Ford.
Yep, Cherry Curry.
And the fourth one. Yeah. Suzy Quatro?
Yeah, well, there were... No.
Suzy Quatro was a different person, I think. She was who Joan Jett idolized.
Yes.
I feel terrible forgetting
the fourth. Well, each one of those, each one of the girls actually picked an idol to kind of go after, but that was Joan Jett's idol.
Yeah.
Suzy Quatro. So, that song was...
There's people at home right now screaming because they know the fourth.
Yeah. Well, and I have it written down, For the Love of Pete.
We'll just call her.
Well, there were a few other people that were actually in and out of that band, kind of... like, I know Sherry Curry, when she came into that band, she was taking someone else's place, and people were supposed to play certain instruments. They ended up playing different instruments to be in that band. But, an all-girls band kind of opened up doors for, I think, women in rock.
There's such a huge difference from The Runaways and this particular song.
Yeah, I think that The Runaways... Well, I mean, Cherry Bomb was a huge one for them. And that was very in-your-face, like, sexual.
Yeah.
She starts moaning
halfway through the song.
Yeah, and I mean, they were performing over in Japan a lot, and that was Japan's number one song at one point for a pretty long time. They performed a lot over there. And her outfit...
Imagine that, Japan liking... women and
I know.
Like she was in garter, like bodice,
yeah,
teeny boobs hanging out, you know, and
it was very, they were very sexually forward at a time when
they were very young.
Were they?
Very young at that point. Like, that band started, I think, when Joan Jett was 15.
Oh, wow.
Like, so being that sexual on stage, that's...
It would have been a lot for an adult, never mind. Right. You know?
Yeah. I don't think you... Well, I say you couldn't get away with it now, but...
Well, I think that's
different.
That's half of, like, what, yeah. like, early Miley Cyrus and Britney yeah. Spears' first video and
yeah.
stuff like that goes down to Creepsville real quickly.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, so anyway, for me, Joan Jett herself was the goal.
Yeah.
Not necessarily that song in particular, but like Bad Reputation is actually one of my favorites for her, but and the Blackhearts.
And that to me is quintessential Joan Jett. Like when I think Joan, I think that this song with any other performer wouldn't bother me because Joan Jett comes across as so strong, so driven, so outspoken, and so positive, even, you know, even in her runaway days, like, she was an ass kicker.
Yeah, I mean, she wrote a ton of their songs. It's kind of shitty how things went down with Kim Fowley, you know. They wrote a lot of songs together, but she was a very significant person in the Runaways, and I hope people were excited when she came out with the Blackhearts. Like,
I think they were. I remember this was a pretty big song as well.
Because I wasn't listening to this
yeah.
in 1988, but I think as I got older, my role models were my brothers. Like, I was always doing the guy. Like, I was always more comfortable with doing guy things. Like,
yeah.
skating with my brothers or wrestling down in the basement or, you know, like snowboarding, like that felt more comfortable to me. So I think for me to see a woman in my teenage years.
Yeah.
Being comfortable with not dressing like a stereotypical girl would. Like,
right.
it doesn't have to be dresses, you know, like to me that felt good. And I was like, okay, that's okay that you don't want to do that too.
The black leotard, the full vegan, you know, she was quintessential. I mean, she was always kind of a problem area for me growing up because she was metal at a time when I really was, like, my metal was Sabbath and Iron Maiden. But she looked punk, you
yeah,
know?
Yeah,
like,
it was always, there was this fluctuation between rock and metal and punk.
Yeah.
Like, it was an in-between.
Well, she was pop. I mean, she was pop too. You know.
Yeah,
I mean?
Yeah. That was the sort of fulcrum that really.
We talked about this in another podcast, but it's that poppy thing where there's a punk image, there's a metal image, there's like, you know, they're pulling cherry picking from from the things that are at least aesthetically are appealing to people.
Yeah.
And helping. I mean, because that image, I think, was help. Strong image, but in a pop way, I think it was helped to be craft.
But she was never like when you
it
look
didn't,
at.
It didn't feel manufactured. I'm just saying.
That's
I'm not,
where
I'm
I was
not
going,
trying
yeah.
to say that by no means. Just that I have to taper some of this with. She was pop. I mean, they were making pop music at this point.
And interestingly right. enough, the co-writer of this song, Desmond Child, was the king in 88, 87, and 86 of. Creating pop music.
Right.
I mean, he wrote a lot with Richie Sambora.
Yep.
They did a lot for Bon Jovi,
yep. mm-hmm.
Alice Cooper,
Cher.
I mean, so this song.
Meatloaf.
Yeah.
So I have a unique. Yeah, he wrote a lot of Bad Outta Hell.
Those third album, I think he wrote half the songs, yeah.
But my take on this song is not. I refuse to accept that this is about a weak Joan Jett feeling herself pulled back. By a guy. So in order to manufacture a new way of taking this song, I think it's about the record industry. Mm. And I think it's my theory, follow me on this one, is it's actually about Desmond Child writing about his relationship with an industry that he's good at, right? He excels at it. He's won all kinds of awards, but that is taking advantage and manipulating and using him for its own nefarious purposes.
Well, in that way that we know the record in the music industry does, right?
Totally and 100%. I mean, he talks, first of all, he was in a cult that bled him for millions of dollars.
Did they name the cult?
Oh, God. No. Yes. In the article, there is a name for it, but I don't remember exactly what it was.
Need to...
And then after that, he got, he was asked to sell a bunch of his songs, not just to bands, but for commercials and to companies that just want to buy them, like Michael Jackson buying the Beatles catalog. And so he says, the lawyers were like, don't worry, you get your song back after 35 years. But that's not true. You don't get them back for the whole world. You just, number one, get them back for the U.S. only. And you don't get your songs back, number two, for the versions that made them hits. You only get them back for new versions, versions made after you sold.
Yeah, it sounds like a lawyer's involved. That's
well, to me, it explains why soundtracks are full of a ton of cover songs.
Sure.
You know, so these guys can make a little bit of money. But his story gets really sad because he starts to talk about how streaming like Pandora and Spotify are actually hurting him even further. Because he says streaming has cut down his royalties by 50% in 3 years. And they're still going down, even though, because we're in an 80s resurgence right now, all of his songs are way more popular than they've ever been.
Right.
And so he says that basically things like Pandora and Spotify are deadly to the industry and that people don't know how little the actual artists receive for the art that they make, how much of it's just grabbed from the lawyers and the record companies.
Yeah.
And this always gets me on my sort of high horse about, if you love a band, go see them. And you may scoff at a $30 t-shirt, but that's what's putting food on their plate. Don't illegally download because that hurts.
Yeah.
It's one of the, you know, I've just as an anecdote here, I used to love getting CDs. I never was liked vinyl because I didn't have a record player and I wanted some portability, right? It was hard to move with a bunch of records. I could move with CDs. I loved the digital format of music because then I could have it on my, you know, iPod or cheap clone of an iPod at the time.
Various brands.
You know, all the, as these things.
Oh, would that be the Microsoft Fuse?
No, I had the Zen.
Oh yeah,
Zoom. I had like some whatever. It doesn't matter. I had a Polaroid. I would find, being a little bit of a tech geek, I would go find like the cheap knockoff version of all those things.
Sure,
but that I could find and get cheap on eBay. But even now, everything's on my phone. But I'm loving now the vinyl has kind of resurged.
Yeah.
Right? And everyone's getting in and they're making these collectible things. So it's nice to, you know, I still want the digital, but because when I'm in my car, I can't spin a record. And even now it's...
You're just not trying hard enough.
I actually had a rant with a record company because I bought an album and I expected a digital download with it.
Yeah.
And it didn't come with one. And I was like...
He went off the hook.
The audacity. Like, how could you even do this? And I wrote a pretty lengthy email about to them about it's just kind of... It should be done.
Yeah.
And I understand your stance of we don't do digital. From a purist sense, like, you know, classically, depending on who you talk to, everything sounds better on vinyl. Metal in particular, with a little bit of the fuzz that happens just from spinning a disc, always seems to actually sound better. Some of it I claim I can't hear, but in terms of that. But at the same time, when I'm in my car, I want to be listening to the music that you're distributing, that you're producing, and I can't now.
Right.
You've screwed me out of... You know, I guess as an adult, I'm going to work every day. I spend 2 hours a day in my car. That's when I'm listening to music. I'm not blasting, Pantera when I'm at home with my family. I'm doing it in the car ride.
Well, I was going to say, who are you trying to impress here? Because I don't think that's the truth. But
well,
okay.
I do it sometimes because but
your kids are making stir fried.
The car ride.
Walk.
Yeah.
Nice. You're following me.
Nice. So, but anyway, I sidetracked us there. But I appreciate both. But I do like where you're coming from. It's nice to buy that thing that is you that you know, and at least in some fashion, some percentage of what you're doing is definitely getting.
Why doesn't want anyone to be able to take it away from me? Like I own that too, this record.
Yeah.
Now, outside of my negligence, a fire, or thieves, or ex-wives, I will not lose that record. I have that music. Someone can't take that. There's nothing that says that Amazon tomorrow doesn't go tits up and say, we're done, pull the plug, or say, we're not doing digital anymore, game over.
Right.
And now you're stuck.
Right.
Or that iTunes, the most nefarious of them all, says, we're going to do the MP5.
Yeah.
And suddenly locks it in so that you can't, you know, share, or you can't play it, or you can't, you know, do whatever you want.
The internet can help with that, you know, as a community in that Apple still, you get enough weight behind them, they can still do what they want.
Well, it quickly finds its way. I mean, quickly finds the loopholes. It's like with the whole net neutrality thing. Yeah. The internet will slow down. It'll be out 2 years before half the kids at MIT find pirated ways to move around that. It's just as simple as that. nobody is going to put up with a slow internet in this day and age.
So two techie things from 1988. You kind of just say what you mentioned, MIT.
Yeah.
Mm. The first
virus?
The first internet worm was introduced to this idea of what would become the World Wide Web. It wasn't quite a thing yet, but they were already talking about these things and presenting topics at various kind of industry conferences, and they're already thinking about the ways in which it could go wrong. The first internet worm was it
invented as a way of saying, here's what can go wrong, and get that out?
Actually,
is it a Jurassic Park scenario?
What's the Jurassic Park scenario?
That we made these things, we have controls on them, but we can't hold it back.
Right.
Yeah.
That nature, like the internet, will find a way.
Yes. Sonny Bono elected governor?
Yep.
Mayor.
And it was all downhill from there.
Spring. Oh, you're good. This was also the year of Dukakis being told he's no Jack Kennedy.
Man, we talked about this, I think, before with Quayle, but like, do you imagine that there was a time when presidents
were... Did I say Quayle or Dukakis?
You said Dukakis.
Whatever.
It was Quayle.
Quayle.
Yeah, it was
Quayle.
I mean, there was a time where he misspelled potato, and people thought, man, he's not good enough to be president. And now we have a very stable
Look
genius.
At us now.
Yes.
I mean, luckily we have a stable genius as the head of this country.
Like, really?
Because all of those unstable nincompoops that we've had before us.
Yes.
You know, terrible, terrible times. Anything else?
Lastly, from my notes of 1988, it is the.
The Jurassic Park scenario. Someone needs a sandwich.
This is what we get before doing. Yeah.
Did this involve a sandwich?
No.
Because I definitely need one.
NASA scientist testifies to Senate that man-made global warming has begun.
Wow.
Oh.
It's been BS ever since then.
It's been fake news ever since.
Damn starving polar bear.
That was horrible.
No, that is
a
terrible video.
Horrible video.
I know. But you were free to see it thanks to Inventions in 1988.
Woohoo.
So that we have one last thing, Brooke.
I'm going to read the cue card thing again and mess that up.
Yes, you are. But I think that what you should do is, instead of our typical playout music, if you'll give me a second.
Oh.
I am going to digitally find
Taylor Dane.
Taylor Dane song entitled,
I'll Always Love You.
Two more facts about Back to Joan Jett as we close out. This is the song that's used for the NBC Sunday NFL football intro. It's been used as such
and
since
it's
2006.
Sung by a pop star.
In 2006, it was Pink.
Yep.
And from 2007 to 2012, it was Faith Hill.
Right.
It is currently Carrie Underwood.
Yep.
Wow.
The words were changed, but the music is the tune.
I hate myself for touchdowning you and
something.
For touchdowning you.
Whoa!
I think we just made it worse than Cherry Bomb.
Yeah. Wow.
All right. So do you want to intro the our closeout song and then you
do? Can, I have time to tell why we're doing this?
Of course you do.
Okay.
Yeah.
So this song in particular was also a choice for songs of 1988. And when Chris and I were
so this is our short rummaging. List now. The short list. It's like these are the ones that didn't. This is a song that didn't quite make it.
Yeah, these are the songs that we were like, we could do this, but we're not.
Yep.
So anyway, Chris heard was going through songs. This song came up.
Michael Jackson, The Way You Make Me Feel.
Yeah, that one did too. I think Heaven wasn't is a place something on about Heaven Dirty is a place Diana on Earth? Was also around during
oh,
this time.
Oh man, that would have been a good one to talk about.
Carlisle.
So
Don't Worry, Be Happy by Bobby McFerrin.
No.
Any others? Chris?
A Groovy Kind of Love by Phil Collins.
Wasn't there
Simply Irresistible?
Mamma Jamma. What's that song called?
I have no idea.
That's exactly what it was called. But please.
Anyway, so back to Taylor Dayne. So the Taylor Dayne song, I'll Always Love You, that song, I heard it and it like made my mind explode, because going back to when I was a young kid, my parents bought this van. It was a Ford. And when you buy, apparently when you bought a new car through Ford dealership, they give you these cassette tapes. And this was one.
Ford Chrysler Oldsmobile, by the way.
This was one of the songs on it, and my dad used to play this cassette like every time we got in the van, and yeah, this song was always on.
This is a jam.
Yeah.
And I'm going to say she has the same hair
she
as
does.
All four members of the Pantera.
She
oh,
does.
Bazinga!
We are on the internet at Radio Mutation, Podbean, iTunes, and cutbycut.com. Send bonus tracks and comments to cutbycutpodcast@gmail.com. Follow us on Instagram at cutbycutpodcast. Check out playlists for the season on Spotify. And head on over to iTunes to give us a review.
What's next, good sir?
Well,
Eric,
let's
you
go
are no
to...
Jack Kennedy Carlson.
Let's go to the topic engine. Brooke, would you like to select from the topic
yes.
engine, please?
B12.
Episode 20 will be
bingo! Oh, wake up!
That's going to be our next track.
With a huge exclamation point.
So if you have a song that wakes you up, gets you hopping, gets you going, is the pep in your step or the zing in your sling or the caffeine in your coffee or the sun in your eyes, don't look directly in the sunlight. Would you kindly send it to us over at cutbycut@gmail.com and all of the good stuff?
I'll probably try an Instagram post again, because that seemed to have some success. So thank you.
And we don't have to go back in time to do it. So
thanks
we'll see you
for listening
at episode 20.
Bye, guys.